Tonight, investigators are zeroing in on two different dates, according to multiple reports. They are taking a closer look at both January 11th and January 24th. Of course, that was weeks before Nancy Guthrie vanished. It was on the night of January 31st into the 1st was the last that we saw of her. And again, the dates in question right now are January 11th and January 24th that apparently law enforcement is taking a closer look at. Begging the question, was someone watching the house long before the abduction? People have said it was a targeted attack. And also tonight, the sheriff warning that the person responsible could absolutely strike again. So what is he talking about?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. We also bring you live trials, gavel to gavel. And if you've been watching us today, you know we're on verdict watch for Corey Richens, accused in the murder of her husband, Eric Richens, by giving him five times the lethal dose of fentanyl. The jurors have not gone home for the day. They are on mountain time, 2 hours behind East Coast time here, where it is 7:03 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, March 16th. So if we do get a verdict, we will cut this short and we will flip over to the verdict, which the COE is keeping tabs on. But tonight, because it is necessary, we are diving deep back into Nancy Guthrie. We are keeping tabs on this story that was just dominating news headlines. And believe it or not, still is 44 days into the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, of course, the mother of today's show host, Savannah Guthrie. And now new reporting is revealing that the FBI is focusing on two key dates, January 11th and January 24th. So why those dates? We're going to ask our guests in just a minute. Let me bring them in here. First up, Detective Phil Ramos, three-time Police Officer of the Year with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. He spent 15-plus years in the Homicide Division at the LVMPD. Next up, Kurt Dabb, Pima County retired homicide detective, and he is with us as well, as is his friend and our friend, Lieutenant Bob Krieger, SWAT commander, apparently not in command of his Wi-Fi, but now he is, and here he is. Great to have the three of you guys back, especially on a Monday when I'm adjusting back to the work week and coming off. Like I was telling everyone, Bob, we had a trial today and we're in jury deliberation. So if you see me getting spastic, it's because we're getting a verdict in the other case and we'll have to go back there. But again, these two dates that keep coming up, excuse me, January 11th and January 24th, Brian Enton and others have reported that apparently the FBI is taking a closer look at these two dates. Phil Ramos, if you had a guess, why is the FBI now going back and sort of hyper focusing on the 11th and the 24th, which is about 3 and 2 weeks, prior to the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie?
It could be a couple of things. It could be, they're making headway on these 40,000 tips that came in, or they could have gotten some information from the residents that there was some sort of activity that warranted a second look on those 2 days. If I recall, one of those, no, it wasn't the internet interruption, but it was some suspicious person. I think it was on the 11th, and I'm not sure what they did mention about the 24th, but my question was about the 11th. If there was a suspicious person on there, why did it take so long for that information to get to the cops, to the investigators? And, we say it all the time. If you see something, it may mean nothing to you, and it might be minor in the overall scheme of things, but you never know when it's that last little puzzle piece that the investigators and the detectives need to have to fit into the whole scenario. So it's an indication that they've made progress in one area, but it's hard to say exactly what it is.
Yeah. Quick bit of breaking news here per the COE. If you can read, you can see it here. Jurors in the Corey Richens trial are staying. They had the choice as of right about now whether to stay or go, and they've decided to stay, which means they could be getting close to a verdict. We have a stream, an alternate live stream going. Joe Picciuto is monitoring that as well. She's been with us, the law professor. If we get word that there is a verdict and they come back, it will be on the stream that is currently up, and we will take that live. But until then, we'll be here talking Nancy Guthrie with three of the best. So you get double action here on a Monday night. So here we go. But Kurt Dabb, let me come to you in your Wildcats hat there. Could it have been and Michigan, baby? Are you from Michigan? Oh, there you go.
Yes, sir.
I am.
I'll have to connect you. I'm going to introduce you to my friend Matt Brode, who I've told you about many times. Yeah. He's from Ann Arbor, so he's a huge.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so I'll have to introduce you guys.
We got spanked by Bob's Boilermakers last night, but the game meant more to them than it did to us. So we still got the one seed.
There you go. Tournaments this week, man. March Madness, everybody. So these two dates again, January 11th, January 24th. Do you have a sense that maybe that there were like dry runs on these days, that there were? There's something on surveillance that we don't know about that they're focusing. Why perseverate on those two dates?
Yeah, I think that's highly likely, considering, you know, all along originally, oh my God, this is, you know, professional. And then you look at it and you're like, no, it's some bumbling idiots. But, you know, they got very, very lucky. They knew about the scene. They knew about the situation. So, yeah, I don't think it would be too far-fetched to think that, you know, they did a couple of dry runs. You know, they did some reconnoitering around the area to see what's what. But, you know, again, as investigators, you don't know on what you don't know until you know it. So them continuing to go farther back and farther back just, you know, shows that the investigation is moving along. It's moving out in, circumference, you know, a circle. Mm-hmm. And they're just going farther and farther. So I think it's good.
Yeah. Bob, if you can answer this, the show's over. And if you can do it in under 30 seconds, it's over for good. Is this case ever going to be solved? That is the question from Christy. And I think that's the question right now.
Yes. So we're done. We can go home because the answer is yes. I keep saying it's going to get solved. Like Kurt said, like Phil said, the investigators only know what they know right now. There's 40,000 tips to go through and it's weeding through them. Eventually something is going to give, whether it's electronic, whether it's DNA, whether it's something else, something will give eventually. And it's unfortunate to say this, it might be tomorrow. It might be in 15 or 20 years. That's just the nature of cases like this. Until other things start happening, it's not going to get solved like that, but it will be solved eventually. That's why there's a show called Cold Case Files. You know, it is what it is. But the good thing about that is, and I guess the good thing, there is a good thing about this one is the attention that it has, that's not going to subside greatly. You know, if it were anyone else, maybe it would subside a little bit more, but that is always every few years we push back up if it's not solved, and that'll light a fire under folks in the county attorney's office and the sheriff's department and the FBI to keep kind of pushing at it.
Someone here says, I have a feeling they're close, and I don't think they're talking about the jurors in the Corey Richens case, but rather investigators. People have that sense, but Phil Ramos, you've got the gut instinct after all the years you spent in law enforcement. Do you think it's, are we talking weeks, days, weeks, months? Or are we talking what Bob also put out there, which is 15, 20 years? What's your gut tell you?
You know what? It's a coin toss, man. Because we don't know everything that they know is what it boils down to. They may be this close. They may need one more statement corroborated by someone before they take it to the DA. They may have one little piece of evidence that they're still plugging away with DNA to put it over the top. One thing you can be assured of is they're in close contact with the DA all the time, bringing them up to date how close are we? How close are we? And the VA is going to say, you're not there yet. You're not there yet. So they're chewing away at all those tips that came in and waiting for the one that's going to nail it. So on the other hand, conversely, it could end up being a cold case, like Bob said, and it could take a couple of years or it could take a couple of weeks. There's just no way of knowing because we don't know what they know.
Is that a nuclear alarm going off? I hear, I think that's someone's cell phone buzzing there. I don't know whose, but there was a cell phone buzzing on a desk and it sounded like we were about to go to war. So I hope that's not the case. But everyone relax. It's Monday and we've got three. We have one guy that can kill you in a quarter of a second on the panel. And two other guys that can do it probably almost as fast. So everyone stay calm. Ramos, I have a feeling that was your phone vibrating there. But we're all good. Are you getting inside scoop on this case, Phil?
No, I've got a little bit of a family emergency. So let me hold on for a second. Okay.
Yeah. Do you, I'm going to pounce you out. Okay. You do what you got to do. Well, pounce you out there. I hope Phil is okay. He looked, very concerned there. So I hope everything is all right. If you guys have questions, by the way, please, you got two awesome guys who really understand Tucson and Pima County who both worked there. Again, Bob, retired SWAT commander as of January. So he was just in, and you've got Kurt Dabb. So if you have questions about Tucson or specifics about the story, this is the time to put in Triple Q. This is an interesting question, Bob. We're just going to roll with it tonight because obviously I hope everything's okay with Phil. I'm kind of keeping an eye on him. But do you think when they find a suspect or suspects here, Bob, that they would talk and tell you where Nancy is? That's a whole separate part of the puzzle, I guess. But what's your gut tell you about that?
I would hope so. You know, you see it occasionally, you know, serial killers. I'm not saying this is a serial killer or a serial anything.
You're muted, Bobby.
Oh, no, I can hear him. You can't hear him? No. Yeah.
Let me bounce. I'll come back in.
So, you know, I don't want to throw it out there and say that. I would hope they would. But sometimes, you know, the criminal mind, that's what they're going to hold on to if that's all they have. And use it as a bargaining chip in their favor, maybe to take certain punishments off the table. The best thing I say is I would hope so. I hope that person has somewhat of a heart, because even bad guys have hearts now and then. They have families too, and you know, they see big picture. Maybe that's what it'll take. If they are close to someone as a suspect and they don't have recovered Nancy yet, then, you know, that would be a bargaining chip for them. If they do, I hope they do. That's, you know, it's such a difficult question. It's so hard to say. Like Phil was saying, we don't know what information they have. And he brought up a great point, I thought, that a lot of folks forget about. There could be enough to arrest someone for this right now. There really could. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they're going to get convicted. And that's why working with the county attorney's office and having them in the loop, because if you arrest someone today, all these clocks start ticking, initial appearances, you know, going before all the motions. You don't want to go too soon in that process until you're sure on a case like this. You want to then present to the county attorney like, yeah, we're rock solid. Let's go arrest them now. Unless they're, you know, such a danger, then you might have to. But there are reasons for not arresting people early on when they have that probable cause. So there's a lot of factors involved in all of this stuff.
Yeah. Commander Krieger got that guitar behind him as I think it was a retirement gift, right, Bob?
It was a leaving a squad gift. But yeah, after 5 years with my night detective squad, they don't do plaques for me.
Yeah. And I never noticed until now, because I guess I'm blind, but it has that police do not cross tape as the whatever the hell you call that.
As the strap. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Weird side note to that, since we're talking about it, all the unit people that were in my unit at the time took their department IDs, and you can actually get a guitar pick maker, like that does credit cards and things. Uh-huh. And they used it to make, they took their faces and turned them into guitar picks. And I have all those as well. So if I wanted to literally play the guitar with my people's faces. That was part of the case as well. So they went all in on that one.
That's pretty awesome. That is awesome. Kurt, to you from Karen Love here. I don't, and this has come up. Apparently Sheriff Nanos called off the dogs. That was one of the headlines throughout this, but I don't understand why there haven't been dogs all over the area. I also, Kurt, I don't know that people, including myself, fully understand the use of police dogs. I mean, you've got to have a scent. Just explain, and what is happening? Why are there no dogs? But what do you need to have dogs?
Yeah, 100%. So we use in a homicide investigations, missing person investigation, kidnapping, you're going to utilize canines. Now, the canines that you can utilize, there's different modalities, if you will. You know, there's canines you can use for an article search. So, you know, like we saw that picture of the T-shirt laying outside the front. It was Nancy's. They used a scent so they could go out. So you're using an article, or you're searching for an article like a handgun. Then you have tracking dogs, which are going to track, or patrol dogs, which track human scent, live human scent. So they're going to be able to bring you to somebody, hopefully, that is in the area, you know, at the time that the dogs are out there. But there's a time frame with that going on. And then you have cadaver dogs. Cadaver dogs are going to be used to sniff out dead people. Here in Arizona, today it's March 16th and it was 88 degrees for a high. If we were doing a search back where I'm from in the Upper Peninsula right now, you know, they just got buried with 4 feet of snow. So 4 feet of snow, 88 degrees. There's not going to be a lot of time. The time frame that you're going to be able to utilize a dog is going to be very short based on the weather, right? Especially out here in the heat. So you don't just want to put dogs in every yard, in every neighborhood, searching for nothing. And I understand, you know, everyone's like, well, you could find something. Well, you could too. But you're going to run the dogs down, the amount of time that they're effective. And plus, there's not thousands of these dogs available locally, let alone in the country. You know, we have the Southern Arizona Rescue Association has a subset of it that are search and rescue dogs. Then they also have cadaver dogs that I've utilized in homicide investigations. But they are not going to come out, and we're not going to send them out to jeopardize themselves, their lives, or the dog's lives on a wild goose chase, just hoping to run into something. That's not a good use of your resources. And
yeah.
I can, you know, Lieutenant Bob, if I went to Lieutenant Bob, say, hey, I want to put a bunch, you know, five canines in Nancy's neighborhood, he's going to tell me to pound sand. You know, he's like, no, we're not going to do that. It's a waste of resources. It's a waste of time.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, they're dogs, but they're officers. They're canines, and they've got to be used, for purposes that are productive, not just to put them out there, you know, when there's no, I guess, scent to follow or no reason to have them. But one point that just came up here, another good question, please bring these up. You know, we're footloose and fancy free tonight. We're waiting a verdict. And by the way, a word on the street now is that the jurors just ordered dinner. So it looks like they're settling in, and I have a feeling they're going to come back with a guilty.
Man, this is nerve-wracking time to be a homicide detective, man. Sitting there waiting. It's the end of the day. It's past closing. And yeah, you're just waiting and waiting.
Oh. That's interesting, because you always hear about it from the perspective of the lawyer. But Kurt, what is it like for you guys?
Man, you're sitting there going over every piece of evidence that, you know, you turned over to the prosecuting attorney, you know, during disclosure, and just praying that every interview was done, you know, and you're going to go back, you're taking notes, and you're just critiquing everything. So yeah, it's a real kick in the nuts waiting for a deliberation to come back. And that, I'm just speaking from the detective, you know, I can't even imagine what it's like being, you know, a victim of, you know, a family member of a victim of a homicide, and you know, having to wait for that. It's, It's grueling, but you know, it's a good sign. They're talking, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah. And what was it like for you to testify? Is that something that you dreaded, or you're okay with?
No, I didn't dread it at all. I took it as competition, you know, a battle of the minds, really. It is, you know, homicide investigation is a chess game, and you know, your answers on the stand, you know, better be 100% truthful and valid, and you know, being able to be fact checked. So testifying was nothing. It was just a battle of wits against knucklehead attorneys, defense attorneys.
I love it. Getting a whole other perspective right here. And you know what? It's interesting because I've never asked a law enforcement officer, really. I hear from the prosecutors and I hear from the defense attorneys, but good point, man. These are the guys that do all the work. And this is exactly why you just heard Bob say they could have a suspect, but they're not ready to make the arrests because they're only going to get one shot at prosecuting the case as it pertains to Nancy Guthrie. But Bob, to you, from Jackie and Scott James here, I don't understand why they never took the mat in front of the door for saliva evidence. You know, there was talk about him having the flashlight in his mouth. Who knows whether any saliva dropped there, but apparently they never did take that. There's all kinds of issues about the scene being released too early. Our friend Brian Enton got the shot of that blood like on day two. Should they have taken that doormat out front?
You know, you could say that about every part of the house, quite honestly. There's potential there. The thing, the idea with taking a mat from outside. Now, if it was close to the blood, I would have hoped they at least took samples from it. I can't picture a mat in my head right off the top of my head, but I'm sure it was there. But you could take, they could have taken samples to take the whole thing, to take, cut out all of the carpeting inside the house. It is a balancing act, and that's what the investigators are there for. Their experience, they do know what they're doing, and those decisions are made in the moment. Now, again, for the first 10 or 12 hours, they were really looking at this as an abduction. I guarantee that there probably something along the lines of maybe she walked away, and then that changed, but they still had the scene. So all of those things combined, it's up to the investigators. You literally can't take everything and get it tested for DNA and all of that. One thing, this is the big picture day talking about testifying. It's not free to test for DNA. Someone has to pay that bill. The taxpayers, us, there is a budget within every agency for DNA. You should hear some of the arguments about what's going to be tested and what's not going to be tested leading up to trials between the investigators, the county attorneys, the prosecuting attorneys.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not just a magic panacea. Oh, here we have DNA. That's thousands and thousands of dollars. And if you multiply that by thousands of cases, you don't send everything in for testing either. Kurt's much more apt to talk about this, but you know, you're playing the odds. This is most likely to get what we need. This. You're not sending every piece in because every test is probably pushing $5,000.
Yeah, wow. This is really sobering. I don't think this is something that anyone either talks about or thinks about. But Bob just pointed out, Lieutenant Bob, that everything costs money. And it's not an endless, they're not endless coffers in Pima County. So, I mean, Kurt, pick up on that. I mean, when you were processing homicide scenes and you have to send stuff to DNA. I mean, unless it was something abundantly obvious, you know, unless it was like a handgun that you knew the person handled, how do you know what to send and what not to send?
Look, man, I wanted to send every piece of evidence I had and I'd send it up to my lieutenant. It wasn't Bob. And it gets shot down. No, you can send one or two items. You know, this is how much we have left in the budget. This is how much we have that you can use on this case. So there's very stringent guidelines about, you know, what you can test and what you can't. Now, as an investigator, it's my job to go in there and say, yeah, hey, boss, I've got 25 pieces of evidence that I need DNA tested. I better have the facts to back up the reason why those things need to be tested. That's the only way you're going to convince a command staff, you know, level member of an agency is if it is 100% sure that you need these and that we are going to be able to get something back. And you can never, nothing is 100%, even with DNA. So it's always a struggle, battling the monetary angle.
Yeah, by the way, since we last spoke, Sheriff Nano spoke again to the reporter from Today, the Today Show, and hopefully the COE is loading that up. Now I'll get messages saying you're so mean to the COE. I just said, hopefully the COE will load that up so I can play it because there's a comment in the question section. AR from Wyoming. Thank you, mods, guest COE, Joel. Thank you so much. Carm did me a solid today. I have a friend I went to college with. She has a daughter who's now in high school, and that high school runs some sort of program. And so they asked if my mother could speak to the class, which my mother did. And that required Zoom, which required an army of technicians to get my mother on that Zoom. And apparently it went well. So now I can breathe a sigh of relief. And Carm's legend grows as she now speaks to high schoolers in California. Lieutenant Bob, another great question in the chat. I was just listening to a news story about this on the radio. Apparently, Meta sold like 7 million pairs of those Ray-Ban glasses that record absolutely everything. And apparently what they didn't tell you is that there's now human beings going through, actual human beings looking at these recordings for whatever reason, for research. And so whatever you were doing with those glasses on is recorded for the world forevermore. And people do a lot of weird things with glasses on, apparently, according to this radio report. But the question here was, Nancy Guthrie obviously had a cell phone. And if she had like Google apps or any sort of apps, we know they're listening to us because everything shows up on a Facebook feed. What could they be doing remotely with her cell phone potentially to try to get information from that evening?
So that all goes back to what the technicians and the analysts are doing. You know, in a vacuum, you have to approve those listenings. You know, you always approve, you know, what access apps have to your phones and things like that. But we all know that they're listening because just the things that hit our algorithm after we're done having a conversation. I would hope that there's some information that's useful. But again, when you download and you exploit a phone, I've seen those, what those look like. You're talking hundreds of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, but tens of thousands of pages of data. And what it is, it's connecting those dots. And I don't think, and I might be speaking out there, I don't think that they're actually recording, but they're listening for certain things. Short answer is, I don't know if they can access it or not, but we all know that they do. And with the technology side, what it is these days, and I've seen the work that the analysts can do when they exploit cell phones, if it's there, they will get to it. And again, that's one of those things, we're talking tens of thousands of pages from a simple download. If you had any idea how much data is on a phone, and most of it isn't easy to read. It's one thing to download, it's then to make sense of what it all is, because those downloads, it looks like a Rorschach painting, and you have to figure out from there how it's all connected.
Yeah, and we've got this guy, John Sawicki, who's former police officer and a current attorney, but that's his world, digital forensics. So maybe I'll get John. By the way, he's got the biggest calf muscles you've ever seen in your life, but that's neither here nor there. And he's a pretty solid baseball player. But I'll get him back on to discuss digital forensics as it relates to this case. Phil Ramos, happy to see you back. Is everything okay? Oh, can't hear you. I think we're going to have to make sure that mic is on. There you go.
Now.
Yes, got you now.
Okay. Everything yeah, just a little emergency, but it's taken care of and we're good.
All right. Good. Glad to know. So while you were gone, one of the interesting things that Bob and Kurt just told us were that, you know, you can't just send everything in to be DNA tested because there's little things called budgets. And so a lot of times they were getting pushback, or Kurt specifically at Homicide was getting pushback. Did you find yourself in that same boat where you're like, I want to send everything, and your commander's like, commanding officer's like, no, you got to send X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly a good point. We have our own DNA unit here, and when they send stuff out to Othram, they want to know there's a certain criteria. Is it do we know if it's directly suspect related? Is it a prosecutable case? There's a lot of parameters that have to go through because you're looking at $5,000-$6,000 per shot. And Anthem works with every agency to do the best they can, but they still have, you know, there's a lot of overhead involved in DNA profiling and trying to get that DNA out. So it's, you got a handkerchief with blood on it. You want to get DNA, you speak to our scientists and say, here's the circumstances. This is what I want to do. And then they toss it back and forth and they decide, you know, they're a great tool to have. And sometimes they make decisions that we don't really like, but you know, they're the ones that make the scientific decisions and we're the ones that make the investigative decisions. So, you know, it's teamwork and sometimes you swing at a bat and hit your foul ball and sometimes you know.
Yeah. Judy Herbert here. Thank you. Keeping the story alive and praying that Nancy is still with us. A lot of people don't think that is the case realistically. But you've got to believe that hope springs eternal and that she is still with us in some miraculous way. Phil, another interesting thing that Kurt Dabb brought up, you know, I'm always asking attorneys and prosecutors, but we're on a verdict watch right now for a trial that we've been covering. And we just got word that the jurors have decided to stay late and have dinner. And Kurt was saying, oh, man, that's agonizing. What was it like for you when you were on a verdict watch for a case that you investigated?
Well, here's the good thing about it. With my experience, yeah, you really want it to happen fast. And them deciding to stay and have dinner could very well mean, hey, look, we got one more dinner coming. Here's our verdicts. Let's go eat. And when we get back, we'll deliver the verdict. And I've had that happen. I've actually had that happen with jurors. And they say, yeah, we had the verdict a couple hours ago, but we wanted to get one last free meal. So we're like, okay, well, as long as the verdict's in our favor, then knock yourself out. Go have steak.
Yeah, but it's got to be super nerve-wracking. Teresa, with a question here to Lieutenant Bob. How could any evidence retrieved either inside or outside Nancy's house at this point be useful in a trial, given the complete contamination of the scene? I mean, reporters were out there. The pool man was there. Amazon guy was there. It's going to be a tough sell. I mean, any defense attorney worth their salt is going to dive on that, right, and say Pima screwed this up. The FBI screwed this up. You know, everyone and their mother was here. How do you defend that, Bob?
That is what it is. Guess what? The scene was contaminated before we got there, too. There were thousands of people in and out of that house, made of thousands. But you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. People are coming and going all the time. Just because a scene was released, it doesn't take the evidence that you find hours, days, weeks later away from it. You have to explain why you released it. You explain where you found it. And then you ultimately connect A to B to C to D. And this is why it's that suspect's DNA. Just because I didn't find it on day one doesn't mean it wasn't there. Now, that person better have a good reason why, you know, 2 weeks later it was there. So there's a little bit to go to that. But the bottom line is, you know, Kurt said it earlier, you don't know what you don't know. And we've all gone back to scenes. And everyone on this panel, I guarantee, like, oh, man, we didn't know that at the time. It might be a day later, 2 days later. I remember going back to help out a couple of days later at a homicide and cutting a wall out and retrieving a bullet. You know, those things happen. And so it's just, you explain to the jury, you explain to everyone why, and as long as that's reasonable, it is very reasonable. And, you know, it's just, it's not a magic bullet that the second you take the crime scene tape down, now it's contaminated and nothing can get in or get out. So that's what I've always said. It doesn't look bad. Maybe in the public eyes that they're going back, days later, maybe, but they're still trying to cover everything. So it's not a bad thing. I'd rather them go back and get it after the fact from day one than not go back and just say, oh, it's been contaminated. We can't do anything with it.
By the way, let's take a little impromptu poll. Kurt Dabb, he's looking clean cut to me. Still got that goatee, but he had that long goatee. What do you prefer, the long, long, unruly goatee or the tight-shaven goatee? Let's get a poll going here. Jerry Michaels, Kurt, to you, if the defense asks why something wasn't DNA tested, how do you say no money, honey? What do you have to come up with some answer, right?
I'll answer that question in a second. I saw a question earlier about if any of us investigated the Elizabeth Salas case. And that was a Tucson Police Department case where, I forget how old she was, 9 years old, I think. She was kidnapped from her bedroom window. Everyone thought it was the family, and it turned out to be the ship egg. Well, yes, tangentially, I was involved in investigating that case because that same shit bag had killed another teenage girl in the county. So we were running a parallel investigation, but we didn't actually know it was that same dude until some time in. So, yes.
What year was that?
Oh my gosh, what was that, about 2012, maybe something like 2011, probably, yeah, early somewhere teens. Around there. Mm-hmm. I was in my first stint on homicide.
Yeah, we were helping the streets on that one as well.
Oh wow, and he's convicted, I hope. And
I believe he did get convicted. He was one of those pain in the ass defendants that, you know, he couldn't get along with his attorneys. He was constantly causing a ruckus in the jail, just doing everything he could to postpone. He was a pedophile and a murderer, so hopefully he'll be rotting away for a while. Yeah. But, you know, reference this question. Well, if the defense asks, you know, why something wasn't DNA tested, that's basically what we say. We didn't have the funding to do it. And as, you know, in this particular investigation, it really wouldn't have provided anything that, you know, would be exculpatory or inculpatory. Or culpatory. So yeah, you just have to be honest. And police departments across the country face this all the time. Someone else posted a question, you know, does the FBI, pay for theirs? Well, they run an in-house lab. And so their funding comes from us taxpayers as well. So yeah, they do end up having to pay for it. Well, ultimately it's us, the citizens.
Yeah. This is super interesting to me because you guys are giving us kind of like the real inside baseball, from the cost of DNA to all these other issues that you generally don't hear people talking about. But here, the sheriff's office, speaking about inside baseball, said they had a strong idea of motivation from the beginning. If not robbery, not SA, not ransom, then Bob Krieger, what is it? With Sheriff Chris Nanos and COE. I know you're working on that clip that I want to play for everybody.
Yeah, I don't want to step on any of the investigators' toes, but I do think it was a for-profit attempt. That would be my gut, my feeling on all of this. That's from the start, that's what it was for. And the fact that, you know, something probably happened and they changed mid-event. And I think they just kind of went off grid after they realized they probably weren't going to be able to cash in on any ransoms. So, and they've just gone radio silent since then. You're not going to see this type of behavior from just someone random, trying to do a burglary or a sexual assault, like I said. It was planned. I think that's what those days we talked about early in the program were about too. You know, one of those days I believe was the date that no one would confirm, but what was the other picture that was released on day one with the video, and they talked about multiple dates. I think that that was part of the planning process. So all of these things go to, and that's going to show what that motivation was. And there's really two things that all crime revolves around: money and sex. That's it. There's just not much more than that. It's that simple. So to say that, that's why I say it probably started. The motivation initially was monetary, just because of who the family is, the recognition, and they thought it would be an easy payday, and something probably happened.
Yeah, money, sex, and Phil Waters always adds drugs to the mix. Some people saying there was a verdict, the COE letting us know no verdict, still deliberating. When we get a verdict, if we get a verdict tonight, we will hop over there. Phil Ramos, you know, again, there's two dates now that apparently the FBI are kind of honing in on, which are the 11th and the 24th of January. And what we are learning also is that apparently, according to sources, and there are multiple sources on this, the FBI or Pima County, I'm not sure which, but they've recovered images. But these are, they've recovered additional images. But apparently, according to reports, there are apparently nothing suspicious. They're also thumbnails. They're not actual video clips. Can you, if you have insight into this, I mean, I'm trying to figure out where or how they're getting these, this additional video. Apparently, the cameras, you know, they are they're triggered anytime there's motion. But help us understand this. Why are they getting thumbnails and not video per se? And is that part of why they're looking at these two dates, maybe?
Well, it could be. It could be part of it. But from what I gathered, the images that they're talking about, the thumbnail images, are the way the hardware is written to save these little tiny clips of movement that don't get a full recording. Maybe that's because they would take up too much space or for whatever reason. But when I heard that they were thumbnails, and we've all seen thumbnails and how small they are and how little detail you can see, then my question would be, what would be involved in enhancing those thumbnails? You can blow, you're only going to be able to blow them up so much because of the pixels. And if you can't get a good workable image from there, then the thumbnails are just going to be that. Thumbnails are small. And it just goes to show you how much information is available from those dang cameras. You just never know where your image is going to be at any given time. And, you know, it's something that's part of the modern world. And it's a great tool for us, but it can also be not as helpful as we'd like.
COE, just to answer your question, I think I texted to you earlier in the day. If we don't have it, we don't have it. But it's Sheriff Chris Nano speaking once again to the Today Show. Lieutenant Bob, to you, in terms of what these images actually show, according to reports, I guess people who have inside knowledge, they say that these thumbnails show people in the backyard, side yard. They include individuals before Nancy Guthrie's disappearance happened, but also law enforcement responding after the abduction. We know the camera, at least the front door camera, was removed. So do you have any sense of what this is all about? Is this stuff that they're generating off the cloud after the fact and are just trying to piece together?
Yes. From what I was told about those images, specifically from the backyard, they're recovering it from whether it's a hard drive at her house or residual from the cloud that was monitoring that area off of her Wi-Fi, off of her router. It's just pulling out little bits and pieces. You know, when things are getting overwritten, half of it's overwritten, half of it might not be overwritten. And that's what I was told some of these pictures were. And but again, they weren't timestamped. They were difficult to see. They weren't really anything special other than, hey, there's someone in the backyard. But specifically, they were talking about the backyard, that which tells you there were other cameras. There are other cameras. And I'll go back to a statement from when this all started. If they were able to collect stuff from that front door camera, my hunch, my gut would say that there's some additional evidence that they still have that is useful to them and too important to release to the public right now. And it may be a time when it gets pushed out there, but that electronic stuff, that there's probably more that we are not aware of that will be useful eventually.
I would bet anything that is the case. Judy Herbert, I said she was generous, and here she is with a $50 super chat. Super generous. Thank you so much. I'm still thinking Tucson should call Phil up. Here's my donation for getting me out there. Thank you, Judy. We gotta get Ramos on the case. I'm ready. Let's play it, COE, whenever you want to bring it up. And before you do that, let's look at this comment. Love you, Joel, but please be nice to the COE. She does it all. Sweetheart, could we please roll the video? Honey. Thank you. Here we go. COE doing it on the fly. Look at this. The anticipation. It's like the Heinz 57 commercial of yesteryear.
reference lost on you.
Yeah, you're dating yourself, Joe. Yeah.
Anticipate,
Do you hear the audio?
That's the audio. I guess we can't play it then.
Okay, hold on. Let me do it again.
All right. Why do I feel like this is going to end terribly? Well, I guess we don't have the clip, everyone. It's all good. Don't worry about it, COE. I'll cut you some slack, being it's a Monday. You got a flat tire. Your mother, my mother-in-law is in town. The good news is, everyone, my daughter made the tennis team. I don't want to brag too much, but 1983 to 1987, I was three-time Central Jersey Group 1 state champ in tennis. I don't want to brag too much, but I'm still in the Hall of Fame at Highland Park High School. And I still hold the record for most wins of any Highland Park High School team ever with 96, because tennis has more matches than anybody else. So I'm a very proud dad today, nice. Coming to you with two damaged knees that I can no longer.
Bring her up here, man. We got a guy named Andre Agassi. He's played a little tennis in his day.
Are you friends with Andre, Phil?
I've met him a couple times at work, which I can't disclose, but yeah, good guy, very good guy.
I want to hear that. COE, we're going to try this again. Let's see this. Here we go.
Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos giving an update on the search for Nancy Guthrie nearly 6 weeks since her disappearance.
Do you think that this suspect could strike again, whoever did this?
Well, absolutely. We believe we know why he did this, and we believe that it was targeted, but we can't, we're not 100% sure of that. And so it'd be silly to tell people, yeah, don't worry about it. You're not his target. Don't think for a minute that because it happened to the Guthrie family, you're safe. No, keep your wits about you.
We pressed Nanos about that potential motive.
There is something that's come out in the investigation that gives you a sense of motive here and why this person did this?
You know, I think it's come out from day one. I think from day one, we had some strong beliefs about what happened, and those beliefs haven't diminished.
Do you believe it was a burglary gone wrong?
I'm not going to get into those theories. We have our beliefs. Everybody else has theirs.
Nano says he's intentionally withholding their theory and other details in the case, citing the integrity of the investigation. He confirmed investigators have been asking about potential internet issues the night of Nancy's abduction and said they're looking into the possibility a Wi-Fi jammer could have been used or if there was some other electrical disruption that night. The sheriff also says he's still hopeful the DNA found in the home will lead to the suspect. Liz Kreutz.
Now, thank you so much, COE. And Lieutenant Bob, I really don't want to beat up this guy too badly, but suddenly he is saying he could strike again. And you've got to be careful. I mean, day one, day two, day three, whatever, the first week, he was telling everybody you're perfectly safe. It was a targeted attack. And now suddenly he knows motive, but he's not able to tell you what. I mean, he's just all over the place. This aired just a couple of days ago, and we haven't had a show since this aired. It's a couple of days old. But, Bob, what did you make of this when you saw it? Is this guy just better off not talking at this point?
Yes, he is better off not talking. We all know that at this point. And it's the way he speaks, the way he presents. Because is he accurate in his statement? Yes. But the way he said it is going to scare the heck out of the entire county, of all of Tucson. We think it was targeted. We don't have a suspect in custody. We don't think this is a serial insert whatever crime you want to put there. You're no more at risk than you were yesterday or a month ago or January 30th. Now, I would never say all those things, especially in a media release like that. But presentation is so important, and that's been the problem since day one of this with the sheriff. He oftentimes doesn't think before he speaks, and if he could have said that in such a way that gave the community confidence in the investigation, it gave them a feeling of safety in their community. But the way he put it out there, they went all ears like, "Whoa, dude, someone's coming after me tonight." It's just. That's what we have, unfortunately. And to go back to your very first statement, Joel, yes, he would be better off not talking anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, Kurt, Lieutenant Bob, all he has to do is get a quarter of a second and the guy's gone. But are you now on heightened alert because your own sheriff, Chris Nanos, is telling everybody this guy could strike again? You live close to Nancy Guthrie. I mean, are you on higher alert hearing this, living in the foothills, knowing what happened to Nancy?
No, I'm not on any higher, alert level or anything. You know, I knew and know what he's saying, but, you know, to what Bob said, most of the public don't get his delivery. And we were talking a little earlier, about getting nervous, talking or, talking in court. It's very, very evident to me, to this former retired homicide detective, that Chris Nanos hasn't had to testify in court in well over 20 some years, because you get a lot of experience testifying in court. You can put sentences together. You can use different verbs and adjectives and things like that. He just does not have it. And 6 or 7 years ago, they hired a PIO, a great reporter from one of the local stations here, Kevin Ager. And Kevin should be the one out there giving the press conference, because Sheriff Nanos is not like the chief of police at the New York City Police Department. She gave an amazing, press briefing after the incident out there last week. And then it's just two ends of the spectrum.
I know how to get back to Tucson. Hire the COE as PIO. She used to do the weather in Tucson. Now, boom, you bring her back, PIO. I get to move back. What do you think, COE? You're going to be PIO for Pima, PIO for PIMA. From Somerville here to Phil Ramos, STS has the best guests always, but this is my favorite panel with that funny spelling, either British or Canadian or something. I guess it could be Bahamian and 10,000 other things. Thanks for your respect for the whole legal process, even when it is challenging to do so. I got to be honest, this is one of my favorite panels, because the Tucson boys are they're easy, and Phil Ramos is low maintenance man, but a cool cat, as I like to say. Phil Ramos, you were never a sheriff. How can the sheriff be confident, Phil Ramos, that the perp may strike again and not a one-time crime? No profile of the perp given to the public yet. Does the sheriff know who could be a potential target? I mean, he specifically said early on that no one was in danger, and I think everyone breathed a sigh of relief. And now 44 days in, maybe 42 when this aired, he's saying he could strike again. So if you're, the public, the greater public in Tucson, what are you supposed to think? I mean, this is really bad messaging.
Yeah. And Bob was absolutely right, man. It very poor choice of words, very bad timing and delivery. The whole thing is the guy hasn't been caught. They don't know who he is. So is it possible that he could strike again? Yeah, it's possible. He might be overconfident saying, hey, I did it once, I can do it again. But I'm telling you, this guy, if he's still alive, he's on the run and looking over his shoulder. I wouldn't worry about that comment at all.
Phil Ramos, hate to interrupt. Hang on one sec. We've got breaking news. We've got a verdict. I'm going to bring the COE in here, where everyone remain calm. It's the first rule of breaking news. Remain calm. COE, we've got a verdict. Do we have a time that they're coming back to read the verdict? He's working on this.
Be quiet. Hi. I'm trying to confirm with Gigi. She had originally said that they would let her know at 6:30.
That is, it is now
8:30. So it would be 8:40 for us in 35 minutes. I'm trying to confirm that.
Oh, so we have time. So I should keep going with this for a little while.
Yeah. I'll let you know.
You let me know. Okay.
Okay, thanks. Great.
All right, everybody.
Told you they finished dinner and said, okay, let's go.
Yeah. Now they're going to finish dessert.
And then the detective's throwing up his dinner because he's nervous as hell.
that was funny. And you got a real, she was... Three kids, man, in the house while you're trying to do this is never easy. That's why the first thing I did was I built a little studio right above my little Bank of America in my little town. And I go and I can hide. But the COE, she's usually stuck in the madness. So credit to the COE. But we'll bring you the verdict. It's live right now on the other stream. They're not going to read it for a little while. So we'll head over there in just a few moments. But let me just round out some of the information that we have here. I mean, Kurt, to you, you know, we're all beating up to different degrees on this sheriff, and to a large degree, I think he deserves much of what he's getting. But him aside, how is morale, or how are you hearing morale is inside the department pertaining to this case? I mean, are people, quote unquote, you know, losing hope? Are investigators staying hopeful? Where do people stand?
Yeah, no, there's no losing hope going on. You know, the homicide detectives that are assigned to the task force, you know, I don't know who they are, but I've heard that, you know, they're hard at work. And you just have to take the case day by day. I'd really like to know, you know, if you're going to, the FBI is going to form a task force with the sheriff's department, you obviously want your best detectives over there. Well, sheriff's department parlance, your best detectives are going to be your homicide detectives. And so if they've got the homicide detectives, you know, over at the FBI building, who's investigating all the other missing persons, all the other homicide cases that are going on? So that's my questioning, you know, that's going, you know, hopefully the sheriff has utilized the decades of experienced homicide, former homicide detectives, and are either allowing them to be part of this task force or, you know, work the homicide cases, you know, that are coming in. But as far as I know, towards the morale surrounding the case, it's high because everybody knows that it's just a matter of time. And when you're the case detective, man, your days are not over. You've got work to do every single day. So as far as the overall morale at the sheriff's department, that's not so good.
Yeah.
But that's been that way for quite a while.
That's what I figured. Quick update, everyone. The verdict's going to be read in 22 minutes. We're going to go here about another 5 to 7 minutes. And then the COE is going to have, if you're interested, it is the Corey Richens verdict. She is on trial for murdering her husband with 5 times the lethal dose of fentanyl. This would be an extremely quick deliberation. We're talking just a matter of a few hours, but this feed will be redirected. So once we end this in just a couple of minutes, I have a couple more questions. We will head over there and we will bring you the verdict live with Judge Mrazek in Utah. So stand by for that. Lieutenant Bob, back to these video thumbnails. I was asking Phil Ramos about it. Apparently, according to the reports that we're getting, and again, I have to underscore, we don't know how accurate these reports are or not. In these thumbnails, there's no sighting of a quote unquote suspect, that the cameras may have malfunctioned or were disabled. And that brings us back to this whole notion of, was there potentially some sort of jammer used? And that brings us back to the possibility that this is much more sophisticated than anyone's given it credit for being. Your thoughts?
I've actually talked a little bit with some folks about the jammer theory, and it is possible. I know there's a picture where down on the right-hand side in that front part, you see a little antenna. And I don't know a lot about them other than what they do and how they work. It's also kind of like, hey, you know, there's guns that can be turned, or cell phones that can be turned into guns, but there was one of them in the world, and now everyone thinks that every cell phone is a gun. If you were a cop 15 years ago, you'd understand what I'm talking about. The reality is that they're not used a ton. My police gut is one was not used. And why do I say that? Because there's a video of a guy standing at the front door for minutes and it's not jammed. He's not going to wait to do that once he goes inside, because the way the body works, similar when you're prepping for a mission, you take care of all those small details very early on. You're not going to tie your shoe in the middle of something that's, you know, small movements, small muscles and things like that. No one's going to put their hand in their pocket once they get inside a house to jam a cell phone when they could have did that 30 minutes before they got there. It's just not the reality. He more likely would have forgotten to do that if that was something. That's why I don't honestly think it is. It doesn't mean it couldn't be, because I guess there was some unforeseen internet outages in the area. But I will also tell you this. Nancy may live in the worst reception area of cell service in Tucson. And I know this because I've been there so many times. and I can't make a phone call down her street. Sometimes up front you can. So there's a lot of different variables that go into service issues and things like that there. But my gut is, I don't think a jammer was used for a couple different reasons. And that those are a couple of them right there.
Yeah. Brianna, jammer theory sounds very sophisticated. It's wild to me because, as you guys know, I was just in Iceland. You had full bars anywhere you were in that country. America, I mean, in Miami, there's so many dead where I am right now. There's an absolute dead zone with Wi-Fi. But I know that Catalina Foothills area, and it can definitely be tricky there for sure. Now, just a couple quick things and we'll wrap it up. But Phil Ramos, there's also, you know, there have been reports of some suspicious person in the neighborhood earlier in January, which is also why I think January 11th is being looked at, because it lines up with the new FBI focus. I would imagine that they're obviously doing whatever they can to try to figure out whomever this suspicious person is. But that would require looking at surveillance camera back from those days as well. I mean, it's really like trying to find a needle in a haystack. I mean, how do you, as a detective, keep your wits about you and stay upbeat? You're literally looking for a speck in a vast desert.
Well, you don't keep your wits, man. You got to keep them in check. But my question would be to whoever said, "I saw a suspicious person." My first question would be, well, what made him suspicious? Why do you think he was suspicious? Tell me your feeling and explain to me why you think this was a suspicious person. And you go from there. You know, if it was a good, legitimate reason, because of the time of day, because of who was around, who wasn't around, and all that stuff, and then you just hope and pray that someone's got some imagery on their security systems of this person and go from there.
Yeah. Once again, a verdict has been reached, and Corey Richens, we're going to bring it to you live. This feed will redirect in a moment. One final thing here, Kurt Dabb. There are also reports out that apparently, and this is today, all over the place, that Savannah Guthrie, and she's been, it's been reported about before, but it's back in the news today that she's absolutely livid about these earlier reports that any members of her family were involved. And we know that the sheriff has since come out and, quote unquote, cleared them as suspects, even though I don't know that we have a suspect in mind. Some of the quotes in the reports are she is livid about it, and she definitely does not suspect her sister or her brother-in-law, who became early targets of the media. What is your reaction to hearing this alleged report where Savannah is very upset about this being brought into the public eye?
Well, first of all, I would never tell, you know, a victim how to feel. You know, she has every right to feel and, you know, say whatever she likes. She's the one that's going through this. However, in an investigation like this, you know, like I talked about very early on, and you all know, is that you have to start at the center. The victimology in a case like this, you know, has to be extremely extensive. And what I mean by victimology is you have to know every single thing about that person. In this case, Nancy, everything about her house. Everything about the services that she used, everything about her family. Where does her family eat? Where do they live? Where do they sleep? Who do they hang out with? These are all things that should have been done initially. And yeah, it sucks for the family, because it's the last thing that you want to think is that a member of your family would be capable of doing something like this, let alone to another member of your family. So I can understand her concern and frustration. But it literally is the right thing and the professional thing to do, to start at that center and work your way out. Now, you're not going to go gangbusters and slamming stuff down when you're interviewing the family members. You know, me interviewing a tweaked out crackhead, you know, that just killed somebody is a lot different interview techniques than if I was interviewing a doctor.
Yeah.
It's just the facts. So we're not going to go out there and badger these individuals, but we have to know where they were. We have to know what their alibis are. We need to know locations. And for the sheriff to, you know, just say, well, they're cleared. Well, Yeah, I had information early on as well, you know, that they're at the bottom of the list, quote unquote. Yeah. That doesn't mean that they're clear. So as far as I know, no one's been cleared, but I would never tell Savannah, you know, how to feel about how this case is going on. I think she has every right to be extremely critical of this investigation as a whole.
Yeah. And I think she was directing some of her ire to some of the reporters early on who were kind of bringing her family into the fold. And look, the media is going to media. And I agree with Kurt. Yeah, you can't tell a victim how to feel, especially in a situation like this. Go ahead, Kurt.
I will add one thing to that. You know, we've all, me, Bob, and Phil, we've all gone to houses and had to tell family members of some sort, mothers, fathers, brothers, or sisters, that their loved one was either the victim of a homicide or the suspect in a homicide. And usually the answers from both families are, my kid would never do that.
Yeah.
My loved one would never do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just the way it is. You just don't know.
And that's another excellent point. Number one, it's families are in denial. Number two, kudos to these guys, because that's, imagine your job having to tell somebody that their loved one is murdered. That's not a fun job. But Phil Ramos, give you the final word here. We just have to run off and cover this verdict in a second. And apologies to Bob and Kurt and Phil for sort of, even though we went an hour and 5 minutes, it feels short and a little discombobulated, but that's on our end. And we'll have you back hopefully later this week to pick this back up, because we're staying on this story. But Phil Ramos, again, I've asked this of you before. It's day 44 now. What are these investigators doing, and how are they staying optimistic enough to just keep moving forward from day to day? What's happening there behind the scenes?
Well, you know, the homicide detectives at any police department are the most dedicated detectives on in that agency, because we're investigating the worst possible crime that can happen to anybody. So you, like Kurt said earlier, your best detectives are your homicide detectives. You don't want somebody that doesn't know what they're doing in homicide. It's tough, man. And you know, that notification thing, sometimes it sucks being a detective when you knock at somebody's door at 2 a.m. saying your loved one isn't coming home. It's a very hard job to do emotionally, but you have to block that out. You have to remain objective. And you just got to learn how to speak to people so that you're not insulting them while you still think that they may be involved. It's a tough job, man. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys very much. I hope you know that. Phil Ramos, retired Las Vegas homicide detective. You got Lieutenant Bob Krieger, retired SWAT commander, and Kurt Dabb, retired Pima County homicide detective. If we don't get you back this week, we'll get you back next week. We're going to stay on the story at least one day a week, because it's such a big story. It's still making headlines, and let's please bring Nancy back home. Love you, America. Love you, Vegas. Love you, Tucson. And again, bring Nancy back home and say a prayer for the Guthrie family. We're going to redirect you guys now to the verdict stream for Corey Richens. And gentlemen, I apologize in advance, but I'm going to dive off of here. Thank you, everybody.